Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, it's the year 2017, which means that there's not a lot of huge marquee races on the ballot come November 7th. We've got a couple of big mayoral races, or at least in big cities. They're not expected to be all that close. And then there's two governor's races. The one in New Jersey to succeed Chris Christie is not expected to be close, which means for political junkies, all eyes are on Virginia, which, of course, is the only state in the country with that one-term limit. So Terry McAuliffe cannot run again. At this point, it looks like you and I will probably be wrong on him being removed from office for one reason or another. But we still got a couple months, so you never know. We also have a pretty tight race now between Ralph Northam, the Democratic lieutenant governor, and Ed Gillespie, the former RNC chairman who very nearly became a U.S. senator in 2014. Most of the polls throughout the last few months have shown Northam ahead either by a very little or even up to about 10 points. But more recently, the polls have narrowed. The Christopher Newport poll has it 48-44 in favor of Northam. And for the first time on Tuesday, Monmouth University has a poll showing Gillespie ahead, albeit obviously within the margin of error, at 48-47%. But one of the reasons that it looks like Ed Gillespie is gaining ground is because on critical campaign issues, he's doing better. Gillespie, according to Monmouth, is preferred over Northam on handling jobs and the economy by a 41-29% margin, which is better than his 38-33 edge on this concern in September. In particular, Gillespie now has a 43-24 advantage on the jobs issue in Eastern Virginia, reversing a 37-31 deficit there last month. But here might be the biggest issue, Jim. On the issue of crime, Gillespie is up 40-24 on Northam. That's a 16-point spread. Last month, it was only 8. And the key issue here is MS-13. Here is one of the ads that Gillespie has been running, which takes it right to Ralph Northam.
MS-13 appears to be surging again.
The MS-13 gang lured the victim into a Fairfax County park, stabbed him repeatedly,
committing violent and brutal crimes.
MS-13 is a menace. Yet Ralph Northam voted in favor of sanctuary cities that let dangerous illegal immigrants back on the street, increasing the threat of MS-13. Ralph Northam's policies are dangerous.
I'm Ed Gillespie, candidate for governor, and I sponsored this ad for a safer, stronger Virginia.
And Jim, especially in Northern Virginia, MS-13 is very real. I just got an Amber Alert, I bet you did too, on Sunday about a girl abducted in Prince William County, Virginia. Turns out she's okay, but she was taken by a guy who's affiliated with MS-13. So this is hitting local communities, and this issue is resonating, and it's working for Ed Gillespie.
I tweeted a bit about this yesterday, and I got a little bit of pushback from the usual suspects saying, here go Republicans again with Willie Horton tactics. And isn't this terrible? And, apparently one of the file photos of gang members that was used in the ad was actually of a Guatemalan gang down in Guatemala. Here we go. More paranoid xenophobia from the right, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you mentioned the Amber Alert. And I just want to, I'll just give you the headline in the Washington Post local section today. It's gruesome. It's horrible. I understand this is not what you're used to getting with the Three Martini Lunch, but the gist is MS-13 members threatened to cut off teen's fingers and burn her, prosecutors say. Then she was killed. All right. Now, is this mean that North Virginia is overrun with, and it looks like a Mad Max hellacious post-apocalyptic landscape in which gangs rule? No, but this is a region with a fairly significant gang problem that is getting worse. That's not as bad as Chicago on the weekends. We shouldn't overstate it. But if you live in this region, it is perfectly reasonable to be concerned about MS-13. People do not like turning on the local news or picking up their newspaper and hearing about absolutely horrific crimes that involve murder, that involve brutality, that involve torture. And oh, by the way, drug trafficking and sex trafficking. If I'm Ralph Northam, to me, the right response is, okay, and here's what I'm going to do to deal with MS-13. But you see this response from not necessarily from the Northam campaign, which has basically decided to, if they were an NFL team, they'd be taking a knee in the third quarter. They really are running one of the most passive and quiet and generic Democratic campaigns I've seen in a long time. And they do not seem worried about losing this issue to Ed Gillespie. We'll see how it shakes out. But my guess is That the timing for the Ralph Northam campaign could not be worse, to have a whole bunch of MS-13 crimes in the headlines at the exact moment that Ed Gillespie's message is, we really have to crack down on this. This is a menace to our communities. And yes, does it point out that a good portion of the members of this gang are illegal immigrants? Sure. But I look at it as mostly as a crime campaign, not as a immigration, keep out immigrants xenophobia campaign. And I think it's the fact that the Democrats don't see this, the fact that Democrats see this as fairly baseless paranoia, I think says a great deal about how they're not necessarily in touch with life as it is lived by a good portion of the people in the state.
Yeah. The sanctuary city policy, the embrace of that by the Democrats in general, has got to be a loser. If it's not a loser in the long term, we got some very serious problems. And just watching the campaign, especially from Ralph Northam, Jim, it reminds me a little bit of John Kerry. And since you wrote the Kerry spot so long ago and know so well about that campaign, what do you make of the fact that Ralph Northam, who has been in either the state legislature or the lieutenant governor's chair since, I think, 2004, is basically running his entire campaign on the fact that he was a military doctor, which he should be commended for, but he left the military in 1992.
I think when this race really kind of began in the general election, Ralph Northam had a name ID of about 50%, which is not terrible. But if you've been lieutenant governor for 4 years and mostly half the state hasn't heard of you, and you won an election 4 years ago, and you were in the state legislature before that, I think it says a decent deal about that. Yeah, people probably don't pay nearly as much close attention to their state government as they do to the fights in Washington or what the president said or something like that. But I think it says something about Ralph Northam that he's been in the job for, the second most powerful position in the state for 4 years. And most people have, even most Democrats have only the vaguest familiarity with him. So I think if you want to be the next governor, you probably should spend 4 years of being lieutenant governor accumulating as many accomplishments as possible. And maybe you can chalk this up to the way the other thing is also everybody knows you're going to run for governor. There's a very good chance you'll run for governor in the next election. So you'd think people would be eager to get stuff done. Ralph Northam, as you said, emphasizing the military service and the doctor stuff and his medical background in these ads. Look, part of this is because doctors and soldiers are more popular than politicians, but I think also because that's probably the most interesting thing about him, which doesn't say much for what he's done in government so far.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on with the Republicans, perhaps booting their own easy election victory. And that's the special race to fill the Senate seat formerly held by Jeff Sessions down in Alabama. We are now on round three of this campaign. There was the first round that eventually led to the Republican runoff between Roy Moore and the incumbent interim senator, Luther Strange. Roy Moore won, and now he's running against a Democrat named Doug Jones, who's a former federal prosecutor. According to the latest poll from Fox News, this deep red state is a dead heat. 42% for Moore, 42% for Jones, 3% for other, 11% still unsure. When you look at the numbers deeper in this poll, 47% strongly support Jones, 48% strongly support Roy Moore among their supporters. The interesting number is that 21% of Jones supporters really dislike Roy Moore, and that's one of the big reasons they're going for him. Only 7% of Moore supporters are doing so because they really don't like Doug Jones. So obviously, Roy Moore is a very controversial figure. We've talked about this. He's said that, Keith Ellison, as a Muslim, shouldn't be able to hold public office. He's drawn admirers and a lot of critics for the way he's handled issues where he has defied the courts. So that has made him very controversial, whether it's Ten Commandments or definition of marriage. Interestingly, some of the polls before the runoff showed that Luther Strange would have also been in a tight race with Jones because of his cozy relationship with the disgraced former governor. So we've basically got a situation here, Jim, where there's a lot of Republicans who don't like their nominee. I'd be curious to see a poll of how many Luther Strange voters are and are not going for Roy Moore at this point. But with a little less than 2 months to go here, the Democrats have a real shot at this seat.
Yeah, and I don't want to overstate this. This is one poll. It is indeed Alabama. It is a poll of registered voters, not likely voters. Roy Moore has time to build support. And you'd look at the remaining voters and say, okay, he probably has a better shot of accumulating that. With all those caveats in mind, this is Alabama. There's the Republican candidate in a statewide race should not be tied with a Democrat. Doug Jones may have, this is not an unbelievably well-funded candidate. This is not an unbelievable, this is not a celebrity candidate who's known for great achievements outside of politics. This is a fairly standard Alabama Democrat. And Roy Moore, at least in one poll, is in danger of losing this race. Now, there's one interesting dynamic here, that if you believe that Breitbart.com editor and former Trump advisor Steve Bannon is being a destructive force in the party, this is not just rhino squish Jim Garrity saying this. Apparently, there's some reports saying that Trump is telling him, why are you going after John Barrasso, senator of Wyoming, and a bunch of other conservative Republicans who voted with the White House something like 96% of the time. Bannon has openly said that absolutely every Republican senator should get a primary challenge, except for Ted Cruz, because the Mercers won't pay for it. And that's one that strikes me as a very cynical selection of who you think deserves to be run out in a primary. You look back at the 2010, when Rubio was running against Charlie Crist, when Pat Toomey was running against Arlen Specter, there was a good record of, hey, here's a case where this person has not voted in the interests of the party. In the case of some of these guys like Barrasso, it doesn't make any particular sense. It's just conflict for the sake of conflict. But Steve Bannon, fairly or not, is given a considerable amount of credit for the victory of Roy Moore. Some say he came in kind of late and basically, was leading the parade by getting in front of the crowd. But here's the thing, if Roy Moore loses this, does Steve Bannon have a lot of egg on his face? Does Steve Bannon look like a guy who managed to run off Luther Strange, the incumbent, who probably, as you said, the other polling indicates it's close, but you figure an incumbent Republican in Alabama has a pretty darn good chance of winning re-election. I think if Roy Moore loses, you could see Steve Bannon, the idea that he's some grand, chess master of politics and that he's this giant force that Republicans need to reckon with. Look, he managed to, what he's really good at least in this case, is he put up a guy who's in danger of losing to a Democrat in Alabama, which just takes quite a bit of effort. You don't just stumble into a potential loss to a generic Democrat in Alabama. So we will see if that shakes out. I think if I were a betting man, I still think Roy Moore will win. I'd like to see more polls. This seems like a bit of an outlier. But if it isn't, then it indicates that this clash-hungry populist wave that Bannon is attempting to direct could be extremely damaging to Republicans. And oh, by the way, if this comes down to a Doug Jones victory, well, then all of a sudden Republicans don't have a 52-48 advantage heading into the midterms. They have a 51-49 advantage, making passing legislation that much harder.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a tough situation, and I actually think Alabama Republicans got it wrong in the first round. I think of the three candidates, Mo Brooks might have been your staunch conservative that can actually win quite easily in the final runoff, given all the struggles that both Strange and Moore had. But we'll see. You're right that Moore has been ahead outside the margin of error, although in single digits in most of the other polls, I think usually 6 to 8 points. But he's normally hovering right around the 50% mark. So we'll see how that goes. 2 months to go. A lot can happen there. Jim, we know that we'll have a new senator from Alabama soon. There are still some Democrats who believe we might still have a new president soon, and it's the president they were hoping they would have earlier this year. Yes, there are still people conjuring up ways for Hillary Clinton to become president, and not in 2020, pretty darn quickly. This is from Newsweek. Lawrence Lessig, you might remember him. He's the professor who, I don't know if he actually got into the race or thought about running for the Democratic nomination, but either way, he never really did anything seriously about it. Then he reared his head again in December, claiming that 20 Republican members of the Electoral College were going to vote against Trump, and they just needed a few more. In the end, there were only two. Now he's back with a 5-step plan for Hillary Clinton to become president in the very near future. Step one, if Trump is definitively found to have colluded directly with Russia, he would be forced to resign or be impeached. Step two, if Trump is removed, Vice President Mike Pence would become president. No, that's true. Step three, if Pence becomes president, he should resign too, given that he benefited from the same help from Mother Russia. Step four, if Pence resigns before appointing a vice president, House Speaker Paul Ryan would become president. Also true. Step five, if Ryan becomes president, he should do the right thing and choose Clinton for vice president, and then he should resign. Jim, we've known for a while that some of these Democrats and reality don't spend a lot of time together, but this one is really beyond the pale.
First of all, my first thought as I hear about this is, Greg, and for all of our listeners out there, we probably all had like one friend who got dumped by that, you know, girl he was head over heels for, and she was pretty clear about it. It's over. But he still talks about her, and he still kind of obsesses about her, and he's convinced she's going to take him back someday. And someday, if he just does the right thing or finds the right words, someday they'll get back together and live happily ever after and get married and have kids. And you just want to stage an intervention for your friend. And you want to say, it's time to move on. No, it's not going to happen. You can't live in denial. You cannot spend all of your days yearning for this happy fantasy that is not going to come true. And you're basically denying yourself any chance of a better future because you're so fixated and obsessed on this one particular happy future that's never going to happen. That's kind of what's going on with Lessig, and his friends really need to stage an intervention. Look, Lawrence, we've all been there. Sometimes life just gives you a you-know-what sandwich, and it's just really tough to deal with, but it's time to move on. You really need to find another interest, a hobby, stamp collecting, something. It's a scenario he's describing here. First of all, like, I don't know, do you see Trump resigning?
No.
For a while there, it was interesting. Oh, Trump is going to hate the job. It's going to be too much work. He's going to find it frustrating. I think it's safe to say, this far into Trump's presidency, that no, he's never resigning. Now, could he be impeached? Well, you got to get the votes in the House, and then you got to get the votes in the Senate. If Democrats win the House, that's pretty easy. Winning the Senate is tough. And man, it would have to be, you know, videotape of Trump and Putin going, blah, ha, 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 we will destroy America together before I think Republicans would agree to doing that. And then if you do that, he says, well, Pence should resign because he benefited. Well, okay, except unless you've got Pence on tape going, blah, ha, 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 I just don't see Mike Pence being a Soviet sleeper from the 1980s. Now we're in mind control Manchurian candidate scenarios. But even if you have that tape, then you've got Paul Ryan, who at some point would say, oh, well, I just feel so guilty about everything that happened. Now that I'm president of the United States and I have the chance to enact my agenda and fix this terrible wrong and lead the country and all that stuff, you know, I never mind the fact that I wanted to be, you know, vice president to Mitt Romney a few years ago. And I'm going to give it to Hillary Clinton because it's the right thing to do. And as Lawrence Lessig says, she really deserves it. I mean, at that point, there are Dungeons and Dragons scenarios that are more realistic than that particular sequence of events occurring. So once again, I hope somebody talks to Lawrence Lessig and kind of says, God, but, you know, like, just take him out, buy him a beer, introduce him to some new Democratic candidates. Let him get excited about some other Democratic candidate. Show him there are other fish in the sea so he stops reliving the breakup over and over again and can move on with his life.
Jim, I don't often give advice to Democrats, but in this situation, I would either quote Dr. Henry Jones Sr. from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade as he is holding his son's arm while his son is reaching for the Holy Grail, or the movie that my daughters love, Frozen and Queen Elsa. My advice simply is let it go. Just let it go.
Exactly.
Yeah, on one level, this unhealthy obsession by the Democrats is probably good for us. But in another way, it's just really, really disturbing. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.